This is the House Labor Committee meeting in hearing room E of the State Capitol on Monday, April 25, 7 p.m.
House Subcommittee on Workers' Compensation Benefits Bills come to order. Representative Hanlon, Johnson are present. We have, for everybody's information, if they haven't read it yet, the latest Safe Corporation comp news says Oregon's new ranking of 13th in the country, recently completed by the Insurance Division and presented to the House Labor Committee by Insurance Commissioner Joe Driscoll, indicates we no longer have such a high rating, dubious distinction in rates. It further says that according to the Insurance Division's analysis, Oregon ranks 20th in benefits. And Ralph Faulkner, for those of you who don't remember his testimony, this is a quote from Safe Comp News, says that Safe Corporation shows that their rates have been lowered to an average of 50% of what they were 3 years ago. Also, if you haven't seen this publication, for everybody's information, the centerfold this month is our leader.
Here. Bill's leader, yes.
I know where the boats are.
For this evening, we have on the agenda six benefits bills, and for everybody's information, so we can get down to taking information. Wednesday evening, we will have some more bills to have testimony on. Representative Johnson, do you have the numbers of the bills?
I don't have them.
I do.
Jennifer, Representative Johnson requested that couple of bills be heard on Wednesday. Jennifer, can you tell us what those will be?
The bills which will be heard on Wednesday in our revised schedule are House Bill 2806, House Bill 2831, and House Bill 2914.
The middle one was what?
2831.
Okay. Additionally, I've had a request from Representative Bellamy that House Bill 2601 have a hearing in this subcommittee. And Jennifer, I'd ask that we also put that on the agenda. And if you would contact those people. I said this was going to be a benefit subcommittee. Chairman Springer indicated that this committee could have ongoing jurisdiction. Other benefits bills or ideas to be discussed, and I throw them out because they've come from requests of me that these ideas at least be discussed in subcommittee. I had a letter concerning doing away with periodic payments of permanent partial disability. That is, as I understand the request, when permanent partial disability is awarded, it shall be paid rather than doled out monthly. Another request for a hearing was to consider permanent partial disability increase in dollars per degree, since Oregon is one of the lowest in the country on permanent partial disability. Another request, and I throw these out as requests because I think some of them may be a bit controversial. Another request was that the evaluation of disability, permanent partial and permanent total, including unscheduled and scheduled, be re-evaluated by statute, and those rules and regulations which presently exist, which are apparently in conflict with the existing statute, should be considered to be directly overruled. I understand the Court of Appeals has considered at least part of some of the medical evaluation rules and thrown some of them out. And the last request I've had for benefits bills is the non-compensable parts bill. If I may explain what that means, it is my understanding that in some cases where there is disfigurement or loss of a part of the body, i.e. Spleen, kidney, testicle, there is no compensation provided for in the statute, and that perhaps this state should consider whether or not that is a whether or not that some of those should be enacted into law. That's to give you all an outline of what I foresee the subcommittee doing. We have on House Bill 2378, which is the full benefits bills, we have an amendment proposed or handed in today by Roger Lutke of the Southern Spalding firm, or of the Schwabe. Mr. Lutke, you'll have to, the Schwabe firm out of Portland.
Mr. Chair, before we go any further, could I ask, are those bills that you, or the issues you described, are they already in bill form? I didn't recall seeing those bills in bill form before. And are the issues that you described in bill form before, are they out there, and or are the issues...
I believe at least two of them are. I am not positive of that, Representative Johnson. These are merely ideas, and if we're going to be an ongoing benefits subcommittee, I think we should have full discussion of all issues.
I just wanted to know what we were going into.
On 2378, I have Mr. Lutke's amendments, and 2378 full benefits bill is where the fee is not to be taken out of the award, but rather be added on. I'm going to carry that particular bill over to Wednesday night. Other bills that I would like carried over and will carry over to Wednesday night, other bill, is the removal of the safety device bill, which is 2473. We can, one more thing. We have correspondence to the committee, and I'd like it entered in the record. We have correspondence from William Fox, lawyer in Salem, who has some statistical information on all benefits bills. It is similar, according to counsel, of those things provided in the National Chamber study, but we want to enter that into the record. And Mr. Lutke, will you be back Wednesday night, or do you wish to explain your amendment now? Because we'll take it now.
I prefer to explain it now. Someone else may be here, but I'd sooner put it.
Let's go. Why don't you come on forward and explain?
I'm Roger Lutke, as you said, and I'm here representing the Association of Workers' Compensation Defense Attorneys. I've testified before in 2378, as you may recall. I was also down here when Ross Dwinell of United Grocers was here, and he spoke on 2378. Representative Leak, and he mentioned a couple of points, and Representative Leak asked that he put those in amendment form. Mr. Dwinell was ill all last week and is putting his letter together now, but I talked with him this afternoon, and since I was coming down, he asked me to bring this to you. I should make clear from the start that the Association of Defense Attorneys and Mr. Dwinell's organization, the Self-Insurers Association of Oregon, opposes the bill. However, in response to Representative Leak's request, we're submitting this proposed amendment that would, I think, address a couple of specific problems with the bill if the committee is determined to refer it to the floor. The issues that are touched upon in the bill are distinguishing between settlement by stipulation and our resolution of an appeal of a disability award by stipulation as opposed to following a hearing. And also clarifies, that's one of the things it does, it also clarifies that the attorney fee over and above compensation is not to exceed a figure that would equal 25% of the additional award. In other words, it's not an open-ended attorney fee. It would be limited to 25%, but it would be paid over and above compensation. I felt some ambiguity in that, and I think it would be important to have it in the statute to avoid future litigation over that. And then the third thing is to incorporate a practice that is prevalent in condemnation proceedings and to a certain extent in civil litigation that encourages settlement by providing that if the employer carrier following issuance of a determination order makes an offer to settle, I think we heard a lot of testimony about following an order, time passes and disability may increase. Well, this enables the parties to arrive at a settlement if something like that has occurred by the employer carrier if recognizing that there is greater disability than awarded by the division. By making an offer to settle for that amount, the proposed amendment sets forth a time limit for that. It must be more than 30 days prior to the scheduling of a hearing, prior to a hearing, and then within 20 days following the offer, which must be written and must be sent to the claimant's attorney and would only apply where claimants are represented by counsel at the time of the offer. Must be replied within there must be reply within 20 days, either in a rejection or acceptance within 20 days, and then if the matter goes to hearing and there is an increase that exceeds the offer, then the full attorney fee is awarded as in the normal case. If there is no such increase, then there is no additional attorney fee. And it would, I believe Representative Shiprack was expressing some concerns, Representative Leake as well, if we could solve this problem of the what happens with the time gap. At any rate, the amendment is drafted, it seeks to speak to that problem. Has an added sentence that the referee who is hearing the case not be made aware of the offer, so that there's games playing, not be made aware of the offer until after the award has been made. We'd be happy to answer any questions. I suspect you may not have any now, and if I would assume that I would hope that someone will be here Wednesday night that can answer the questions if you have.
Representative Johnson,
I don't have anything.
Counsel.
Mr. Lutke, you don't have a copy of the statutes in front of you, do you?
No.
On attorney fees. Do you think that there is authority in the statute right now for an award of attorney fees payable by the employer when the claimant on appeal has merely increased his or her benefits in, say, a permanent partial disability case, was awarded a small amount of benefits, achieved a large increase on appeal, attorney takes home 25% of that under current rules. But is there any authority in the statute to award attorney fees to the claimant from the employer's pocket in that case?
No. Not in a permanent disability award. There could be fees for a delay in payment. That would be under a separate part of the statute. There could be a partial denial in the case, not specifically on that issue there.
Well, I guess that's my question is, has the statute been interpreted, as you say, to make that a partial denial? Is that
a denied
claim?
No, it has not.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If it's a straight permanent disability issue, if that's the only issue in the case, then if there is an increase, the attorney fee would come out of the compensation, whether it's by settlement or by hearing, by referee's order. What I was talking about, oftentimes in hearings, you may have an issue of permanent disability. You also will have an issue of a delay in payment of some kind, which may be
give rise to
a penalty or attorney fee issue. That's all I was talking about. I didn't mean to confuse the issue.
No, you didn't confuse the issue at all. I guess I'm wondering, it's my understanding from sitting through the testimony on this number of days and now evenings, that those cases that I've just described are the largest number of appeals that go to the board. Is that your experience?
I'm afraid I don't have a grasp of those statistics, if that's been the I have no reason to disagree with that. I assume, as most people do, that the permanent disability is the largest body of...
By permanent, you mean both partial and total?
Yes. That is the largest body of appeals that is seen.
I think the board estimated an increase in 80% of such appeals.
I mean, that's the figure, 80% of...
80% of
those appeals
cases
are
appealed of that type received a benefit increase at some point along the appeal.
Do you mean 80% of cases that are appealed receive an increase? All right.
Of that type,
yeah,
that get to the board.
Yeah.
My figures may be wrong. I'm just talking off the top of my head. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a follow-up, and maybe I didn't understand totally, but you've seen the bill as proposed.
Yes.
Would you say subsection 2 of the bill as proposed allows or gives authority for fees to be added on to by a referee in a hearing for an increase in permanent partial disability, assuming there is an increase awarded by the referee?
Do I think the bill as drafted accomplishes the purpose that Brian
would
say?
Would a referee have that authority under the wording as subsection 2 is written?
I think it could certainly be construed that way. I won't say that if I was on the other side, I wouldn't argue to the contrary. I didn't. That's how I interpreted it.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We have House Bill 2467. That is the bill proposed by Representative Katz. And we have before us, if I recall correctly, Representative Gold's amendments dated April 19th, 1983, and we have an amended bill of those dated April 25th. 1983. Jennifer, do you want to explain the April 25th amendments on 2467?
Yes, I have consulted with Representative Gold, and I have refined her amendment and engrossed it onto her engrossed version of the bill. That's my amendments are my refinements of the language are dated April 25th. My refinements are not intended to change the meaning in any way except to tighten it a little bit. And I did this after consulting with the Mental Health Division and reading their administrative rules relative to voluntary commitment and involuntary commitment. I have a copy of those administrative rules, and any member of the subcommittee who wants a copy is welcome to have one. Basically, what I discovered in reading the administrative rules is that persons, in order to qualify for either voluntary admission or civil commitment to a state mental health facility...
I'm not sure if you want to use the word qualify, but...
It's expressed as admission criteria. The
okay.
Admission criteria include what they call in their rules a severe mental disorder, which is psychosis or other extremely severe mental disorder, and they further define that in their rules. Now that is, they require that, if you will, of anybody who wants in voluntarily as well as people who are committed, the same standard. This amendment gives a grace period for filing for a workers' comp hearing for those individuals who are suffering from that severe mental disorder as defined in the statutes and further defined in the rules of the Mental Health Division. I believe the committee's intent was to draft language that was as reasonably pin-downable as it could get without excluding the people it wished to protect. And this is the format that we chose.
I've got a question, Jennifer. Then the wording of the bill as proposed, would that be consistent with the definitions at the beginning of ORS Chapter 426? Ill definition.
Yes, the chapter uses the terms mental illness, mental disorder, and nervous disorder somewhat interchangeably. All three of those terms are included in the amendment.
And would it be fair to say that there is a body of case law by the Court of Appeals and perhaps even some Supreme Court cases that have further refined the definition?
Representative Hanlon, I'm not aware of the case law. I haven't researched it.
I am aware personally that there are some cases in that area. I don't know personally how extensive they are. Representative Johnson, do you have any comments?
Yes, I just have a question or two, maybe while we have Mr. Lutke here. Have you seen these amendments at all?
Sorry.
Why don't we make a copy available? And since we have the chance to get your opinion, why, we may as well use your expertise. What we're looking at is to try to achieve a bill that deals not substantially with the Nelson versus Safe case and not a lot more. And what we hope these amendments have done is narrow it down to the point where we haven't done much more than that. And I just want to be sure that I would like to get your view, if you feel willing, to comment.
My understanding, I think Dennis Fabrosky was here last Wednesday and talked about this as well, perhaps Kenny Roberts, and the association, I think, and I discussed this with both of them, feels that anything other than someone who is trying to incorporate an exception for anything other than an actual person who is committed is going to give grounds for a great deal of litigation. I think these cases are very touchy cases when a person is being considered for commitment and there's a great deal of factual information that needs to be reviewed. If a person is committed, you don't have that problem. But a question of whether some person falls under the rules of someone who could be voluntarily admitted to a facility strikes me as something that, no matter how careful, how much litigation there is, presumably the litigation and the rules have been drafted for the very reason that there are wide factual, there's a wide spectrum of factual situations, and I think incorporating that into the workers, no matter how carefully you try to define it in the workers' compensation context, is going to present some real litigation problems.
Then it's your feeling that what we really should do is just limit it to that definition, that unless you voluntarily went into voluntary or involuntarily went to into an institution, you would not qualify.
That's correct.
Which was the case for the.
That's
Nelson
exactly
situation.
Right. Yes, I think there'd be just a real can of worms. Otherwise, it to the financial benefit of the legal profession.
I guess that's.
Let me follow up.
Go ahead.
Mr. Lutke, on mental commitment hearings, have you been involved in those?
No, sir.
Okay.
It seems that on this issue, I don't want to keep it for us to beat this thing to death, but maybe we ought to just ease back to that point where we have that commitment issue, because that's really why the bill was brought before us. And not try to expand the definition because we're in such quicksand on expansion of who would be involved. Anyway, it's just an idea.
Yeah, well, it's my feeling on that, Representative Johnson, and I don't know if Have you finished with the witness?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.
It's my feeling that there are a lot of people out there that may not be committed, that could be committed. And
there have been days that I could have had that problem, I think, yeah.
And that the bill as presented, or at least as honed down, is something that at least I personally would be willing to recommend to our main committee because of that factor. You have mental commitment hearings, and I know Mr. Luedtke is trying to tell us to the best of his knowledge, but I've been involved in those hearings and the litigation involved, if any, is short and sweet or sour, however you want to look at it, but it is not a difficult question of law. It's a factual determination to be made.
Are you saying then with that you would, that if under this bill a hearing at some time would have had to have been held for that person to be qualified? If that were the case, that would sort of establish beyond a doubt anyway.
If it's involuntary,
okay.
That yes, one is entitled to a hearing.
But with this bill, would you say then that would automatically qualify the person if a hearing were held, and the determination was that they could be committed? What would happen then if the case would be that a hearing were held and the judge says, no, I don't believe that we should commit this person? Does that mean they then wouldn't be eligible, or is that what you're saying?
Well, as I understand the bill written, it is written with the exact standard under which a person would qualify to be committed. That's my understanding of the bill.
So if a person if an involuntary commitment hearing had been held, the issue is pretty well resolved one way or another. Either they went in the institution or they were turned down. If they didn't, they wouldn't qualify.
Well, what I'm saying is this is a situation where a referee, as a part of the overall hearing, would have to make that determination.
But that would be the criteria you'd use.
Well, the criteria would be whether that person, at the point in time they are asking that they be considered under a disability, could have or would have been committed, not whether they actually were under the bill as written.
But back to the other issue, and that back to the issue of the involuntary commitment issue, either they could or they couldn't, and if they weren't, then they wouldn't qualify. Is that what we're saying?
If they were not committable on that day,
okay,
then they wouldn't qualify. That is correct. Whether or not they actually were committed.
All right, committable on that day. And that's a determination made at that time, is that correct?
That is...
The judge says you're committable, or does he say, I commit you too?
This bill, as written, would be heard by a referee, not by a judge.
Oh, I know, but the qualification for whether that person would qualify under this bill what I'm getting at is the determination of that would be decided long before a referee heard it, and I'm trying to get back to that issue.
The qualification would be decided by the referee at the point in time the referee heard the case.
That's true, but the decision on which the referee decided the issue would have been decided much prior to that time by some judge who said you're committed or you're not committable.
If there actually had been a commitment hearing at that point in time. And only if. If not, the referee would have to make a determination as to whether or not that person could have been committed at that time.
And that's the door, wide open door we're going through.
Well, I think you consider it a wide open door. And as I said, I do not. I think that's a factual determination that can be made by the referees in this workers' comp system. In any case, it would be the motion of the chair to submit House Bill 2467 as amended, dated April 25th, to the main committee with a recommendation that the full committee report it to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion?
Question.
Representative Shipwreck.
Representative Hanlon, could you explain to me the line, starting on line 12, the period for filing shall not be extended more than 5 years by lack of mental capacity. Do you understand that language?
It is, as I understand it, under the general statute of limitations, under ORS 12, Chapter 12. Representative Shipwreck, while you were gone, I asked Mr. Young to come up with figures on what the fiscal impact would be, and I suppose that's also communicated to the insurance commissioner on 133, 166, and 200. I think we have figures as far as could be determined on the 200.
Do you have a copy of that 200 fiscal, Jennifer? The fiscal on the 200. I've lost.
We had three different versions, and the latest one, as I understand, is dated March 9th.
Oh, I do too.
We'll go on to 2379. I think that's the widow's bill. We have some amendments before us on 2379. One of those, well, relates to Representative Hill's request. Or amendment that, and his amendments drafted by legislative counsel are dated 3/15/83. Basically, it deletes the 2-year requirement that a spouse be married within 2 years after the time of the injury causing problem on permanent total disability. That's one amendment. Counsel, would you explain the effect of that again? We get it clear in our minds.
Mr. Chair, this is the gold bricker amendment or the gold digger amendment. I can never remember which.
Okay. It's a good thing the press isn't here today.
The current law, under current law, an injured worker who was on permanent total disability who dies, whatever the cause of death, may not be work-related or injury-related at all, is able to pass on to his or her spouse, surviving spouse, a portion or some degree of that pension. Under current law, a spouse, surviving spouse, will not qualify for that benefit unless he or she was married to the injured worker at the time of injury or within 2 years thereafter, so that injured workers who remarry or marry late in life relatively, their spouses will take nothing when they die. This amendment is intended to remove that 2-year restriction so that no matter what time the injured worker marries the spouse, if he or she survives, is entitled to take that portion of the benefit which the statute designates for a surviving spouse.
Are there comments, questions on the committee concerning that particular amendment? Representative Johnson?
Do we have any fiscal estimates of what this thing actually did? Does anybody have any idea even?
Representative Johnson, I don't have a fiscal. I did speak with Mr. Faulkner about coming up with a fiscal at the committee's request, and he informed me that SAFE felt the fiscal impact of the bill was negligible and that they had, quote, no problem with it on that basis. I would recall for the committee subcommittee's benefit that I believe the figure of deaths last year that were work-related was 68. I'm speaking now to the bill in general, not to this amendment, but those were work-related deaths. And I don't believe we have a number of deaths that would relate to Representative Hill's amendment. Those would be deaths of pensioners, if I can use that word, who are on permanent total disability. So if that was your question, no, we don't have any information on that.
Specifically on Hill's
amendment. Specifically on Representative Hill's amendment.
He indicates that there's a negligible impact.
Mr. Faulkner indicated that the original bill had a negligible effect. That was the increase in benefits.
Okay.
But as to this particular amendment, there isn't any fiscal information.
I think we ought to try to see if there is any available. The question ought to be asked, at least, in case we've got a problem. We don't. I'm always looking behind every corner to see if we've got some hidden.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Shipwright.
If we're, are you done, Representative Hill?
Go.
I'd like to call Mr. Sokoch up and ask a few questions about...
Please, Mr. Sokoch.
Mr. Sokoch, would you explain to me, first of all, explain to me what 4.35 times 50% of the average weekly wage means?
Representative Shipwreck, perhaps I can facilitate this a little quicker if Mr. Young would come forward. Whatever.
I can handle it.
Give him a chance.
I didn't mean to.
I think I know the answer, but I'd just like to make sure I know the answer.
Representative Shipwreck, Steve Sokoch, Oregon AFL-CIO. The 4.35 figure in this formula comes, it actually represents the number of weeks in a month. The 3.5 recognizing the fact that there are some months that have more than 5 or 4 weeks.
Oh.
That's how you got the 0.35.
So what that means, you explain it in layman's terms now to me.
Okay. The 4.35, in other words, the number of weeks in a month, times one half of the average weekly wage. Now, the current state average weekly wage is $304.61.
Mm-hmm.
You take half of that, and that figures out to be about $155 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Multiply that times 4.35, and you come up with a figure of about $662.60 a month, I believe. And that, under the current law, is what the surviving spouse receives.
Does that answer your question, Representative?
Yeah, I was wondering how they got 4.35.
That's how they did it.
The average number of weeks in a month.
Average number of weeks in a month. That's what it is.
Johnson.
I should have thought of that.
Is it... is it not possible with the bill as it's presented here that a person, a surviving spouse, could get less money under this bill than they would under the current statute?
I think, Representative Johnson, if you go back to the original testimony that we presented on March 9th, attached on the second page of that testimony is an amendment, is the 66 2/3 amendment, which states it's an either-or situation, and the amendment specifies whichever is greater. We looked at taking the two-thirds formula strictly across the board, and it would, in fact, penalize individuals who were receiving wages at the time of entry $1,000 a month or less. And our intent was not to penalize that group of individuals, which is why we did the either-or situation.
How does this benefit for $150 a month for each child compare with current payment?
That is not changed in the bill, Representative
Johnson. Okay,
that's the same as what the law is now.
Okay, I guess I'm confused then because it says shall be paid $50 per month for each child in excess of two.
Well, this is the current law, and we make no change to that.
Okay, I see it. Okay, I'm just one line out.
Mr. Sokoch, I believe that the date was February 16th of your amendments.
It's been so long.
Let's correct it for the record. I think that the underlying language, or 66 2/3% of wages received by the worker at the time of death, whichever is greater, and I think you agreed that that should be at time of injury
rather
than death.
That's
so
correct.
That amendment should be made.
That's correct.
Okay.
Is there a fiscal on this beyond the and all? Does anyone know if we've received that? In the amended form?
Mr. Young, can I have you up here for a second? I know I had some questions on this also. Steve, stay right there.
Oh, I'm just giving him the microphone.
Has there been a fiscal impact statement done by your department on
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't believe we've done anything. I believe there's been some inquiry to the National Council. If I remember, either the Insurance Commissioner or our department was going to request the National Council provide that information. I don't know what the status is of it, though. But possibly by Wednesday night, we should be able to respond.
Okay.
Another question for them tomorrow.
If I might, then I asked for some additional information from your office that's over and above any amendments presented. And my question was, the present rate is 50% of the average weekly wage in Oregon goes to widows or widowers in this situation. My question of your department was, how much would an increase of 1%, each 1%, much impact would that have on the workers' compensation system? Were we to raise widows' benefits based on the average weekly wage rather than the rate at time of injury? Did you understand my answer
that
way?
Yes, you're keeping it at the same way. You just want to know what each percentage increase over the 50 would be. Actually, but you're talking about going from 50 to 66 and 2/3, correct?
Or
even higher.
Well, as I understand it, it wouldn't matter. If we got the 1%, we could calculate it out.
I believe the director has the response to that, and he'll be able to provide it to you. He got it late this afternoon, so it is available. And I'm not certain that I can explain it, and possibly if he's available or will provide it, it's an actuarial type thing. If I remember correctly, it's 1.001 times each percentage point.
Is Mr. Green here?
He was
in here. I believe it's 1.001 for each percentage.
I don't understand what that means.
Okay, it's 0.001 times each percentage point. The one is just the main factor. So for every percentage, it'd be times 0.001.
1/1000th of what?
Yeah.
Translate it in dollars. Just say, for every percentage increase What's the total cost to the system?
It'd be a percentage, 1,000th percentage increase in the premium.
In the premium.
Oh, I see. You were talking about premium. We're talking about cost to the system.
So if the premium for the last...
Well, I think that would probably be the cost would be in how it affects the premium.
Yeah, you could translate
total,
it into
total,
premium.
Total overall premium.
If the premium for the last year was $300 million, you'd have to take 1,000th of that?
Right. So it'd be, that's why it's 1 × 0.01, because you're using the three hundred million dollars of premium, and then it's 1/100th of it. I think it works out to about 2% increase over premium.
If it were raised to
66 2/3, because that's 16 points.
And that the overall impact would be what?
About $1.6 to $2 million, I believe, is what it figures. And I looked at this sheet once, so I'm really shooting off the top of the head. But I remember the point is that's the total premium. I'm still shooting. I believe it's going to be about additional $10 million cost. I think it would be best if we have a lecture, because they said the fatal benefits are higher, is almost a 30% increase, whereas the overall situation was what I provided you. And I just read it once, and I'm trying to pull it all out of my head.
Maybe my inquiry wasn't. We were talking about this particular bill, which applied solely to widows or widowers' benefits, and not to an increase in all permanent total benefits. Mm-hmm. Was that the way the question was understood?
I believe it was on fatals. But in their explanation, they had some. They stressed that the fatal benefits would increase proportionally, and I'm really sorry, Mr. Chairman, I just, I'm getting pieces of it in my mind. I can't put it all together in anything coherent.
Mr. Green has that analysis in writing for us.
Yes, he does.
Representative Shipwright.
Oh, I was just saying, instead of, asking Larry to try and come up with these off his head, well, let's get it together and bring it to committee Wednesday.
I agree.
There's no question we can have it by Wednesday.
Yeah.
Easily. It's already
available.
Yeah,
I mean, it's no use trying to guess about this.
Further questions? I think we can deal with the bill. The chair would move to amend 2379 to delete on line 6 the $5,000 and restore the $3,000 benefit. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none. I think that's all we've got and we can deal with on that bill tonight.
Yeah, until we know what we're doing with those two options we've considered.
We are going to have a full agenda come Wednesday night.
All right. If you can stand it, I can stand it.
Is this all Wednesday night?
Well, we are an ongoing committee. We do have direction from the main committee, from Chair Springer, that he wants all bills reported out of these first six for Friday work session.
All right. We'll be busy Wednesday night.
That'll be easy.
How many people are coming up?
It may not be any unanimity, but it will be easy.
Representative Shipwreck addressed a question to Representative Johnson. How many people are coming up from Medford?
Oh, I'm sorry. We kept it to two or three, I'm told. Or they kept it to two or three. When they said, could they send a contingent, I said, how many? And they said, well.
We're carrying over 2473, 2700. I'm told that Mr. Tom Whalen is not here this evening. What's the committee's pleasure on 2700? Representative Shipwreck.
Mr. Chairman, I would, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've ever I know we haven't. I'd like to move the amendments as proposed by Mr. Whalen as printed, as engrossed.
Dated April 19th.
Dated April 19th, 1983.
We have a motion to move Mr. Whalen's amendments dated April 1983. Discussion.
I'm not going to support it.
Judy, will you call the roll?
Johnson?
No.
Surratt?
Aye.
Hammond?
Aye. What is the committee's pleasure on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to withhold any action on that bill until I speak to Mr. Whalen from the committee. I'd like to get a clarification on this language.
Can we at the same time get staff to see if we could ask the person from the city of Salem who indicated this recent case had a tightening of the standards as they relate to current statutes, and ask them how they would view these amendments. And if we have anybody else who's an expert in the field or feels they are, I'd like to hear what they're thinking of, what the difference is between current statutes and this proposed amendment.
That's exactly what I'd like to hear, too.
I've got a comment on that for everybody. I would appreciate, from whatever bias, any comments by lawyers who would wish to be witnesses. Sometimes a person in my position has difficulty delineating out what their function is. That is, whether it is being a politician and a political representative or an interpreter of the laws. And I might point out to everybody those are two different and supposedly delineated functions. So I would be interested in hearing from counsel familiar with these cases, perhaps even on both sides of the cases.
I would appreciate that very much, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
There are two legal terms that, frankly, as a layman, have a very important impact on the fireman.
We have no one else signed up, and we've got our homework cut out for us Wednesday night. Is there anybody else that wishes to add their 2 cents tonight? Mr. Kalinowski. Is there anyone else that hasn't spoken? Mr. Kalinowski.
House Bill 2379, I have amendments to the proposed that are dated March 15. Are there any other amendments proposed other than these?
Yeah, there's...
Yes.
There's amendments March February 16th from the AFL-CIO.
Those were adopted tonight. The notices on unemployment benefits.
Plus, isn't there something else on that too, on 2379? What he's saying is, no, that's the spousal health. It's not there.
Oh, I'm sorry. We were talking of something different.
Yeah. Apparently, she has some for you then.
Anything else?
Did you adopt the amendment on 2379, sir? The Hills Amendment?
We did not this evening. No. Hearing nothing further, we're adjourned.
Good night.